Oh, hi there, Alan.
Good morning, everybody. We will be starting with our workshop in the next few minutes. We are just waiting to get the final confirmation about attendance of committee members, and we will let you know when we are ready to start. My apology for delaying this whole process. Thank you. Indicating that our chairperson is not around due to other assignments of national interest, and we have an apology of late arrival of Honourable Member Ross and Honourable Dubezana, who is currently hospitalised, I'm told, and Honourable Swart, who has also tendered an apology. Now, I will stand in then for the chairperson. My name is Des van Rooyen. I'm the member of the Finance Committee, the whip of this committee. Maybe before we start, members, let me officially welcome you to this workshop. More especially our presenters, obviously in the form of National Treasury and people from FSB, as well as a special word of welcome also to our a member of our parliamentary legal team. I must indicate that in our engagements that, or maybe in the public hearings, or maybe as a result of the public hearings that were held on the 29th of May, I think, where we dealt with the credit rating services bill as well as the financial market bill, it was agreed that we will need a workshop before we process this. In fact, it was our request as a committee that we will need a workshop to be conducted by the National Treasury as well as the FSB around the two bills, I mean, respectively. And we then agreed also that they must then work with our parliamentary legal team to identify what was then referred to as potential legal gaps that might be need to be tightened up before we process this bill at this level. And we further agreed that as a consequence of that, we'll then have a product that will be presented today in the form of a workshop, I mean, to ensure that members are taken on board about the technical or maybe the provisions of the said bills. Now, that's where we ended and concluded. And now today is that date where we're expecting, obviously, presentation and engagements to continue between ourselves as a committee and the said role players. Now, I'm reliably informed that there are other stakeholders that are here. Well, I'm not sure how they were invited, but they are here. And since this is a workshop, it's not a committee meeting where we are going to take a decision. This is just a workshop to enable us to take appropriate decision as a committee that will then be processed through Parliament. We will allow them to observe, not necessarily to participate, but to observe the proceeding of this workshop. So, without any further ado, I'm going to accord the team from National Treasury to conduct a presentation. But maybe before that, the team can just take us through the composition of the team, so as we are able to know who are here, I mean, to represent National Treasury. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. We're also very grateful for the opportunity to speak today. I think, as you said, these are both quite complex bills, and I think it is very welcomed from the Treasury that the committee is asking us for this workshop, because I think it gives us an opportunity to explain for both bills what has been quite a long and complex process. Particularly the financial markets bill, I think we're now 2 or 3 years since we began the review. And so we are presenting to you a product of quite a long period of engagement between ourselves, the FSB, and stakeholders. So just to give you a sense of who all the people are, I am sort of I'm sort of like the ringmaster or the MC of the circus, but I sort of look after capital markets, exchange controls, and banking legislation on behalf of the Treasury. My colleague to my right is Cathy Gibson. She used to look after capital markets, but then she had a baby and a bill at the same time, and in quite a dramatic fashion. And so she is now a mother, and she is working with the Treasury to complete the bill. So she's just consulting to us as we finalize the bill. And then I'm going to start from the left-hand side. On the very far left is Mr. Jonathan Katz. He is a former Secretary of the Securities and Exchange Commission. He was a secretary there, I think he was there for about 20 years. He is assisting us on some of the issues around this self-regulatory organization model and some of the Twin Peaks reforms, and we thought it would be a good opportunity, if the committee had questions, to refer them to him. And he is currently also consulting to the World Bank, so he's one of our advisors. And then next to him is Ms. Petula Sislali. She is in the capital markets area of the Treasury, and behind her is, I think, somebody that everyone knows in the committee, which is Ms. Janine Benagiozi. And then behind me is Mr. Roland Cooper, who's here just to watch the financial markets bill, but he is the expert in credit rating services, and he'll be presenting part of the presentation for that. And to his right is Mr. Edith Stunder, who is legal counsel for the FSB. To her right at the back is the head of the capital markets unit of the Financial Services Board, and to his right, Shamila Kursov, who is also in the capital markets division of the Financial Services Board. And then in front of them are Mr. Edith van Kirken, who is one of the guys that looks after market abuse from the side of the Financial Services Board, and to his left, I don't know if I'm pronouncing correctly, Mr. Solim Mitzi of the also Financial Services Board. He's head of market abuse. And then I don't know if I should introduce the other stakeholders, but just to say that at the back right-hand side is Ms. Maria Firmas. She is the legal counsel for Strait. So that's a central securities depository, and she's been very closely involved in the drafting of this bill. I think this gives you a sense of the team that has been involved in the work of the bill. It's quite a big team, but this is not even the entire team. We're missing about 4 or 5 people. And then there's also behind everybody, there's quite a big staff. So this gives you a sense of the number of people that have had to be involved in the process and just logistics. And then there are some representatives of certain industry groups. Oh, sorry, I've not introduced Ms. Raksha Simarajan, who's from the legal counsel of the South African Reserve Bank. So I think that covers all the regulators and the FSB. She snuck in at the end. And then we have representatives from the Banking Association, who are here just to observe. And then also representatives from the Association of Savings and Investments of South Africa, who are sitting at the end, who have also been part of the process of engagement. I think we've covered everybody. It's quite a comprehensive team. I feel a bit like a rugby captain, or hopefully a swimming team captain, which is better than being a rugby captain. Okay, we're going to the presentation will be in two parts. The first half is the part I understand, which is very simple, and the second part is the part that Cathy understands, which is much more complex. So I'll give you a high-level overview of how we go about regulating securities in South Africa and the reasons why we regulate securities, and then Cathy will take you through a bit more of the complex parts of the bill. This is a more high-level presentation to the presentations we've been giving before, because I think it is quite nice that we have an opportunity just to have an informal presentation on how the whole security system works. So I said all these things where financial markets fits in. And then next week, Chair, I understand that we will be presenting our responses to the stakeholder comments and a revised draft of the financial markets bill based on those. This is an outline of the presentation. Like I said, there will be two halves. The context, as you know, we issued a discussion document or a policy document in February of last year called A Safer Financial Sector to Serve South Africa Better. The reason why we did this is because there's an enormous amount of things going on in terms of financial markets legislation, or actually financial services legislation around the world. And we are under a lot of pressure from the G20, from the Financial Stability Board overseas, and from the IMF and the World Bank to ensure that our framework for financial regulation is the same as the rest of the world. And I think that's a very important component of our work. And so we actually put together a document which tries to outline how we're going to go about doing all of these things. There are three main parts to the changes. The first is changing the institutional architecture. So that's really the question, who regulates? And that is about the shift to Twin Peaks, which I think we have explained to you before, but you will hear a lot about us from this, from us in the next year or two. Then there's also strengthening our approach to regulation. So the question there is, how do our regulators regulate? And there are new banking regulations. We've already passed, the Minister's already signed Basel 2.5, and he will probably be signing Basel 3 towards the end of the year. And then there are three bills that you know of that are currently before Parliament or will be before Parliament. That's the Financial Markets Bill, the Credit Rating Services Bill, and then the Financial Services General Laws Amendment Bill will probably be tabled in about a month's time. And then also another part of it, which is I think is the more important part, is to strengthen our approach to market conduct. So the answer here is, how do our financial services firms behave? And it's important that these firms are held to a higher standard because, as you all know, people's savings and livelihoods are at risk, as is the entire financial sector. So this is just an update on the process, where we are. We have given you, I think you've summarized this already, so I won't go into too much detail, just to highlight that the next week will be the final response, and then the consideration, I understand, will be a week later. And then this just gives you a timeline of all the different things. There's one more bill on, hopefully for this year, but that might have to be early next year, but we're still hoping to get it through this year, and that's the Banks Amendment Bill, which is just to change certain parts of the Banks Act to align it to the Companies Act and to allow for Basel III. And then there will also be next year an Insurance Laws Amendment Bill, and then a Twin Peaks Architecture Bill, and then after that a Twin Peaks Amendment Bill. So as I said, you are going to get very tired of us, but hopefully it will go well. The reason also why I'm presenting this is just to highlight where this bill fits in terms of Twin Peaks. And as I said, Twin Peaks will be done probably, Twin Peaks in financial markets will probably only be done towards the end of the Twin Peaks process because it is probably one of the more complicated parts of the process. Okay, then to move on to why we're doing this. Very obviously, capital markets are extremely important for economic growth. Government and companies access capital through capital markets. For example, the annual fiscal deficit is financed from the bond market, so we borrow approximately 150 billion rand a year from the bond markets, and it's very important that we have the appropriate framework for regulating those bond markets. Then the capital markets also allow pension funds to invest directly into companies, so the PIC, who is the management company for the government employees pension fund, has obviously large holdings in the JSE, so that's all the civil servants' pensions, so that's my pension. So I'm quite worried about that. And then obviously there's an efficient financial market means a more efficient allocation of capital, etc. This is just to give you a sense of where the money comes from. So just highlighting all the stuff in the red is the dark red at the bottom is retirement funds, and then long life insurance is the slightly pink stuff at the top. just highlighting that enormous amount of money comes from ordinary savers into the financial system. And then the black stuff on the top right-hand corner is deposits into the banking system, which is equally from ordinary South Africans. And then the light stuff on the right-hand side is money market funds and unit trusts. But as I point out at the bottom, as we are growing as an economy and as we are requiring more and more borrowing for our fiscal deficit, there is an increased reliance on foreign savings, and that is creating some challenges which we need to address. And this is just a very pretty picture from Asisa that I rather like, just showing it in a sort of a more graphic way to show how the different things feed through into economic growth. And then just two slides, just two graphs on how deep and liquid our capital markets are. It's obviously one of the things that we are very important for our economy, that we have particularly deep and liquid capital markets, which is very important. And then just to say that this is our swimming, which is that we are rated, our regulation of securities exchanges is rated first in the world, as is auditing standards, soundness of banks, and frequency of banking crises. I think you'll remember the slide from last time. But we do very well in terms of this regulatory area, and then obviously we don't do as well in terms of access to loans, affordability, and venture capital availability, which is some things that the Red Book addresses. So what I thought I'd do is just to help you understand the bill. The bill is, as I said, I understand it at a very high level, and I try and understand some of the more complex things, but it's very well arranged in terms of the different players and users of market infrastructure. So it explains the role of the exchange and of the central securities depository, and I'll explain what those two things are. And then it also gives requirements for issuers, stockbrokers, and investors. And then obviously it's important that all players are appropriately regulated. So if you think about who are the main players in the equities markets, and this is generally applicable to everybody else, but the equities market I think is the one which is the most important one and is the most straightforward, I would think. And that there are basically three things that happen in the equities market. That is the buying and selling of shares, so that's trading. Then what they call post-trading services, or what is often called clearing, which is the process that takes place just after trading, and then settling and recording of transactions. And that is generally a five-day cycle. So this happens over 5 days, that you buy, clear, and settle equities. So pension fund wants to buy equities, then that is the process that has to be followed. Different people do this. So the exchanges are responsible for trading. Clearing is a joint responsibility between the exchange and Strait. And then the settling and recording is undertaken by the central depository, which is Strait. And then the people that deal on the exchanges are called authorized users, but they themselves call themselves stockbrokers. Then there are clearing members in the clearinghouse and participants in the depository. So that gives you, basically, you now have the building blocks of the entire bill. And that's how it's dealt with. Chapter 3 deals with the exchanges, Chapter 5 deals with clearing, and Chapter 4 deals with settling and recording. And then all of them are subject to Chapter 7. We'll explain it next week a little bit what we've changed there, but basically that's how it works. Then obviously the bill also, from our G20 requirements, needs to introduce a framework for improving the regulation of derivatives. So that's a key lesson of the crisis. It's a G20 commitment. There are two types of derivatives. The first is exchange traded. What that means is that they are traded on the exchange. And we're quite fortunate in that many of our derivatives are exchange traded. Then there is another type of derivative called over-the-counter derivative. And that is a derivative instrument that is not traded through the exchange. It is literally traded over the counter. And Momo likes to refer to things that are known knowns. He's borrowed it from, obviously, from Rumsfeld. Known known, unknown unknowns, and known unknowns, unknown knowns. Over-the-counter derivatives are unknown unknowns. We don't really see them. They just take place between two players in financial markets. We don't really see how they work, etc. So the G20 has required us to step up our reporting of over-the-counter derivatives, but also to step up the way that we clear them and settle them. And that requires quite a big change to the Security Services Act. So one of the biggest things that the Financial Markets Bill does is extends the scope of regulation to include over-the-counter derivatives. And then this is much more complicated than we ever expected. So we have released a discussion document. We released it when we released the Financial Markets Bill, and it's available on our website. But it sort of sets out how we're going to go about regulating over-the-counter derivatives. But the first two parts, like I said, require us to introduce clearing for derivatives and to introduce some kind of recording mechanism for derivatives. So if you look at my diagram from last time, and all that I've done here is change it to deal with derivatives, and then that means trading, clearing, and settling, and then recording is slightly different. That requires a new clearinghouse for clearing and settling, which we call a CCP, effectively, and a new recording mechanism, which is a trade repository. There is already an existing trade repository overseas, and there's quite a few, actually, but we need to introduce a mechanism to have one here if we need it. And then, obviously, the exchanges. We already have a futures exchange, but OTC derivatives may have to go through some kind of a trading system in South Africa. So we just have to create the framework for that. This is a very much an evolving area. And then the same people are involved. Okay, just quickly on the exchange, one of the top 20 exchanges in the world, vertically, horizontally integrated. It offers everything, equities, equity derivatives, commodity derivatives, etc. And that gives a diagram. And I think this is behind a lot of the comments that we received on the draft of the bill, is that the JSE has a very central role in the entire system. It is both, it does a lot of the front line regulation, but it also provides a trading platform and a lot of clearing, particularly for equities. And you will see next week that we have responded to those comments by introducing a number of new sections which deal with conflicts of interest and ensuring that the JSE manages its role better. In addition, we have begun an SRO review process, which is why Mr. Katz is here, just to review how we could possibly better provide for the Johannesburg Stock Exchange in legislation and in regulation. And then obviously it has a number of subsidiaries. Many of them are, for example, SAFEX, the Bond Exchange, Strait. It has an interest in Strait. So it's a very important player, and we need to think carefully about how it is regulated. And then Strait is the central securities depository, which means that it does electronic settlement of financial instruments in South Africa. It also handles all the settlement of transactions on the JSE, including equities and bonds, as well as those executed off-exchange and a range of derivative products and money market securities. So Strait is the CSD in the system. And it is, as part of this, we have a very successful securities market. As part of that, Strait has been very successful. And then, as I've said, it is also owned by the JSE, but it's also owned by the banks, who all have an interest in it. Okay, so I think that gives you a very high-level view. I hope that helps you understand the structure of the bill specifically, because it deals with each of these different creatures separately and provides for it. I'm now going to ask Kathy just to take you through the bill in a little bit more detail and explain how it works.
Thanks, Roy. Just to, I suppose, explain, I think one of the eye-openers to me being a mom is that if it looks like I've been awake since 3:30 this morning, I have. And if it, well, if I sound like I've been awake since 3:30, I have. And if I look like I put my makeup in the dark, I did. So with those apologies up front, I will get into the content. A number of these elements we have presented on before, so I think what I'm going to move towards is the table at the end, which really talks through what the conceptual issues behind the bill are. But this serves as background to that, so I will repeat it and go through it fairly quickly. I think really what started off as a review of the Security Services Act in 2009-2010 has escalated beyond that into a substantial review, or the beginning of a substantial review of our financial markets regulatory environment, and this is largely a reflection of the international developments taking place at the moment, to emerging from the crisis 2007-2008. Just in terms of how we have been engaging over this process, we have extensively spoken to stakeholders. This speaks to both the SROs, the self-regulatory organizations, as well as the, and by SROs we're talking about the market infrastructure that Roy has spoken to, so the exchange, the CSD, as well as the users of that infrastructure, and that would be the authorized users, the participants, the issuers and the likes. We have had a number of iterations of the bill. And by iterations, our own iterations as well as those which have been released publicly, we've received input, we have done previous response documents and indicated why it is that we've made the changes that we've made, and that was even before we came into the parliamentary process. Since then, we have likewise continued to engage, continued to have public forums, and continue to try and address substantively issues or concerns raised on the bill. Of course, that doesn't mean we always necessarily agree, but I would like to think that we can at least answer to why it is that we've affected the changes or not affected the changes as we have done. In terms of what it is that we've been trying to do, in any financial services regulation, financial stability is key. That's to ensure that the financial markets really, or the financial sector really delivers on what it's expected to do. Financial stability is key, the protection of investors is key, and then what we'd like to have is efficiencies in those financial sectors, and really that's driven often by the market structure. And that's why the structure of the market does increasingly play an important role, and that relates to the some of the discussions that we've been having around the effectiveness of or the need for SRO model, but I'll get to that shortly. In terms of how we do that, well, efficient and effective supervision. We want to mitigate systemic risk, yes, and client protection, of course. The structure of the bill, Roy has already alluded to. I think when you are working through the bill, just keep in mind there'll be the definitions up front that explains the terminology that you'll be needing in order to understand the provisions. It will then talk to the powers of the minister and the powers of the registrar. You will also see the objects of the act, what the act is trying to achieve, what the bill is trying to achieve. And then it works through the various, what you will increasingly become familiar with as the terminology of market infrastructure. And that refers to your exchange, the CSD, the clearinghouse and trade repositories. There are general provisions which then follow, which apply to all of those market infrastructure. Also to keep in mind that each of those chapters of the market infrastructure deals with the users of that infrastructure as well. And then general issues relating to the market infrastructure and its users around the likes of code of conduct. Market abuse then follows in Chapter 10, and then some general sections at the end, for example, around auditing and enforcement. I'm going to change the order somewhat and start with the conceptual issues, which you'll see about four slides on. I think it's slide 32 I can read there. When I read 32, I think you must be congratulated on at least making it this far through already a lengthy presentation, so I hope I can keep you for a bit longer. These really are the issues you need to understand in order to understand the changes that we've made in the bill. And what I will be talking through here, I'm preferring to talk through the issues as they are have been emerging for us, rather than talk through the specifics of the bill, because we are also mid-process. So you have seen, you had the bill table to you, you've had, you'll be receiving a revised bill next week, and so what we'll be speaking to is the diversion in between that, and hopefully when you read the revised bill, it will make sense in that context. There has been a number of issues raised over this process around the self-regulatory model. Now, really what the self-regulatory model is talking about is it's saying that the industry regulates itself. Now, this is or needs to be interpreted in the financial markets context that it is the market infrastructure, so in other words, the likes of the JSE and Strait, that regulates its users. It's not the JSE and Strait regulating the JSE and Strait. There have been ongoing debates around what does it mean to have an SRO? Do we want to have an SRO model? Do we need an SRO model? And these debates center around the fact that these entities issue rules, they supervise those rules for its users, they supervise the act, they supervise how those users engage with each other, and across the world the SRO model is accepted, and there are varying degrees of that of the implementation of that model that talk to these issues that I've just been talking through now about whether they just regulate the users, whether they regulate how the users deal with each other, whether they regulate the broader legislation. In our market, the infrastructure does regulate its users. It does supervise and issue rules about how those users deal with each other as well as with the infrastructure. They supervise the broader act, but they don't enforce that act. And that will be, I think, an important point going forward in terms of our SRO discussions. In terms of why we would want it and why we would need it, there are pros and cons to this model. On the complainants would argue that this gives far too much power to those regulating entities, particularly in a profit-making, if those entities are profit-making and not in a mutual structure, which we have in South Africa. On the other hand, those entities also understand and know the market and their users very well, and so there are efficiencies and one could argue benefits to how effective the regulatory oversight is by applying this model. Do we need it? Well, that's the big question, and I think that Roy has already discussed or made mention of the review going forward. And I think that's an important commitment that Treasury has made. It's not to say that the SRO model will be overthrown overnight, but really what we are wanting to do is test where it's working, where it's not working, and how to perhaps improve it. I think what we have seen, though, is that increasingly the debate is moving away. It's not just about the SRO model. What we need to be looking to is what market structure we want. So how much flexibility can we give through the legislation to be accommodating different regulatory models, different operational models? And I'll talk to that further down my bullets. We had also discussion around the accommodation of an exchange light, I suppose is what you can call it. And this is, there has been a concern that because of the SRO requirements. In other words, if you want to be an exchange or a CSD or a clearinghouse, you not only need to provide that infrastructure, but you also need to have all of these resources in order to perform the supervisory function associated with being an SRO. And this, of course, then feeds into the SRO debate. And what that means is that there are significant barriers to entry in terms of becoming an exchange or a CSD or the likes. So we did contemplate, or we have been contemplating, this an exchange light, or we could call it an SRO light. I don't think we would ever like to think of an exchange light. An exchange light would mean, should we have lower requirements for certain exchanges than others? I don't think so. I think what the bill gives effect to is proportionality. Whatever risks you bring into the market, you must be regulated for accordingly. So you bring fewer risks, you have lighter requirements accordingly in terms of capital, etc. The SRO light, well, that's something different. That's saying, well, can we contemplate that you can provide the infrastructure, but you don't need to be a supervisor? And I think moving forward, what we would like to do is introduce the flexibility that talks to separating the operation or the providing of an infrastructure from the supervising of the users, and that will form part of that market structure decision or investigation moving forward. Looking into expanding the scope of regulation, what we, I suppose in clear-cut terms, the biggest lesson that was learned is that out of the crisis, regulation was not complete. And if regulation is not complete, what you find is that entities will increasingly try and move out of your spotlight into the area where there's from higher regulation to lower regulation. So what you really need to do is make sure that your regulatory net captures everyone. It's not to say that everybody must be regulated in the same way. They must just be on the radar. And again, that principle of proportionality should bear forward. That definitely has been captured through this bill when we're talking about the likes of OTC derivative regulation, for example, but there are other elements that come out as well. We see increasing innovation in this market, and what's been important is for us to make sure that whatever funnies start emerging in financial markets, that we can name them and regulate them as may be required. What the bill, the Security Services Act, currently does is it names certain entities. And if you are named, you are regulated very heavily. If you are not named, you might fall underneath it somewhere, but there's not that power to name you as you emerge and then regulate you accordingly. So in other words, the JSE, for example, it's named and it's regulated very heavily, but there are other types of exchange type entities which increasingly are emerging, and in exchange really all it is, it's bringing together buyers and sellers in a security, right? So there are many, with technologies, there are many new platforms that enable this, but are on the blurry line of the definition. And under the SSA, you either are in an exchange or you're not in an exchange, and then you're not regulated. And I think what we've realized is that binary is not correct, and we're trying to accommodate for the grey area that's emerging all around. A flexible law, yes. I think that's been a very big shift in our thinking. We don't expect that we should be able to name everything now because the markets change, and we need to be able to name things as they emerge. And I'm talking about this naming of things, and I'm sure you've got a lot of questions around what do I mean about the naming of these other types of entities and roles. And we can, for example, be talking about a contract for difference trading platform. It doesn't fall foul of the definition, but it's performing of the exchange, but it's performing a very specific role in the market. Currently, we can't touch it. Should we be able to? Yes, we think so, and that has informed our thinking going forward. And then, of course, preventing a crisis, containing a crisis, minimizing loss. Yes?
I think members must, because this is a workshop, I deem it important to encourage members to pose questions on areas where they think that they are not following. So if there can be a flaw, you know. So members must feel free to pose questions on specific areas during the course of the presentation. Thank you.
Must I continue or take? Okay. Sorry. So in terms of crisis, what we're talking about is a financial crisis. When we're talking about preventing a crisis, we need to our law needs to protect against insolvency and liquidity problems of key players in the industry. Containing a crisis means that if we do have liquidity or insolvency problems, how do we stop the spread of that problem with it from one entity, for example, within a participant in the CSD to other entities? So if you've got if one of the banks starts weakening, how do we make sure that that weakening doesn't spread across? And then minimizing loss will be talking to the same types of issues. Here, what's important is in all these participants, all these market participants, you need to be able to we talk about segregation, and I think what's really important is to make sure that assets that belonging to different parties across the financial, in the financial markets, across the chains, that assets belonging to those different the owners of those assets can be identified, and they are effectively ring-fenced. So that then goes to the minimizing of loss. Of course, then we also want to be able to have mechanisms in place that if we do see risks emerging in the markets, that those need to be identified and communicated through to parties who can do something about it. And that is the registrar, firstly. But increasingly, that role will also be played by the Reserve Bank as what who is intended to be the prudential systemic regulator. Keeping market participants honest, well, yes, market abuse is a very important section that will deal with provisions like insider trading. And then the interplay of cross-cutting laws, this is across a range of different law. Yes, we need to align to the Companies Act, for example, but there are also interplays between the Banking Act, the National Payment Systems Law, the various consumer protection legislation like the Competition Act and the Consumer Protection Act, and we need to make sure that this law speaks to each other in a meaningful and sensible way. Just when you thought it was all over, it is not. Are there any questions on that slide before I move forward?
No, feel free to proceed. They will indicate through me if there are questions to be posed. Feel free to proceed. Thank you.
I think also what will be made more clear is that I'm talking very generally to things, and these things will be given articulation in the coming slides.
All right, sorry, I think there is a hand up set. Honourable Chawlala.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation as it unfolds. I think a lot of work that has been done, too much content. You know, as much as the workshop chair, I would have thought that it would come in a different format. Not in a format, I understand that finances is not as easy. It's not just an issue that you can just browse over it, you know, to be factual. But I feel that there's too much abbreviations to start with, too much concepts. And you're correct when you speak about, in page 16, when you say big concept issues that we need to be wary about. On its own, only on that paragraph, there's so many questions. One would start just to be layman and say, what is this SRO model? You know, as I'm trying to grasp on the model itself, I'm only getting to what you are saying, only on that. So I'm saying that there's so many things if they had to be really unpacked in such a manner that all of us will be able to follow so that they're able to be, you know, conceptualized correctly. So, you know, you speak about SRO model. I was asking myself, okay, do we need the model? What is wrong that needs to be fixed? And what is the benefit? Where has it worked? And you're speaking a lot of things to say that, yes, it might work, might not work, but we need to test it so that we come to a point where we need to review it. So I'm saying I'm being left with so many questions around this just to understand it so that we're able to also move with you as we move along. The issue of SRO light, you are correctly putting it, is that there's an issue of exchange, the requirements we need to be wary about and so forth, but I also don't understand what does this SRO light mean in concept. But I'm saying that only on that slide. I had a question around the issue of regulation to say that you're speaking about high regulation, the low regulation. So I wanted to find out, as much as you're saying, the principle of proportionality must always prevail. I wanted to find out, is it a good indication when, you know, for emerging investors, every time when you speak about high regulation, even if it's low regulation, and can we keep up with the market as much as the market keep on chopping and changing? I understand that this bill is a market bill, we need to be also considerate, but would we be able to keep up at the rate and the level where markets change? I want to find out that, because I think that it would have an issue around crisis management around it, where you've regulated, you've done a bill that we've passed, we come back again, there's another change. Would we be able to have capacity to keep up with it? And we're about to come with a FMB on page 15 on SFA. I think you're speaking about, you know, the issues of providing segregation around assets and client protection. I wanted to find out on the waiting, on the segregation. Is it possible that probably you can probably minimize the waiting, probably say rather than segregation, we say separation, I don't know. I just found it to be a bit of a strong weight, I'm not sure. But, you know, the issues of owners of assets identified on the issue of the waiting. But I also don't want to go back, because also in the first presentation, when you started. There's so many things, but I feel that Chairperson, one is not empowered enough at the rate where the workshop is going already. It sounds like a presentation. It's a normal way where we do things. We present, we listen, we'll just input and ask questions. But more of an interactive type of situation, I feel that you would have probably could have done a bit more around unpacking it properly for us to be able to go with you on the road as much as we travel and make us understand the importance. Probably the enemy is the time, I'm not sure, but I feel that Chairperson is not very much empowering. It's a lot of empowering around information given, but around issue of interaction, it will minimize us. Thanks.
Honorable Koronov.
I think it is not a workshop, and I trying to turn it into a workshop now is basically impossible. We must take it as a presentation, but of course that is exactly what it is. you know, there's so many questions. You know, the financial markets bill will take over the securities, the SSA, is that the acronym? It will eventually take it over. Am I correct? And you know what I try to understand. You know, if you look at this South African regulatory framework, is amongst the best in the world. Well, obviously we are the best in the world, but we're very bad when it comes to not bad, but investor protection is in doubt. If we look at the ease to access to loans, it's not good. Venture capital availability. That's why you have the Fidentias and the Kings, and I can just make a list that long. That's my concern, because if you see what ordinary South Africans are putting their money, or ordinary South Africans who try to grow the economy can't access loans, that is the problem. And I want to know whether this financial market bill will deal with that. I really don't know whether that is the scope. If it's not regulated, if it's not regulated somewhere, will there be teeth in this financial markets bill to deal with that? There's so many questions, so let's have a workshop. This is not a workshop. There's not time for a workshop. There's so many. Why do you want to regulate the JSE more? I don't know. I don't know really why you want to do that. What is the problem? Tell us the problem, and then you regulate it more. We've just started a committee in Parliament. It's a new one. Scrutiny of legislation. And we will specifically deal with every piece of regulation that come from a minister in due in future, and we will see whether that fits with the original thought. That's a huge burden on Parliament if you just start to open up and you want to regulate all the time. So it is a little bit, I don't know, SRO model. Why is the first one wrong? Why do you want a new model? You ask the same question, it's a big question. I don't understand the model. You know, I'm an ordinary member of Parliament. I don't deal with this stuff. It's just in front of us. So let's go through the presentation is my... let's have a workshop afterwards, you know, but with a time constraint, it's impossible to have a workshop.
Members, let's not go around circles, because I think we agreed that we must have a workshop. Maybe let's try to turn what you term a presentation into a workshop by posing question with, let's not worry about time. If really we won't cover the scope of what is in front of us within the given time, then we'll take an appropriate decision. But for now, I'm going to encourage members, as I said earlier on. I mean, feel free to pose whatever question on the basis of this presentation, but also on the basis of what emerged during the public hearings and what emerged during the deliberation of a committee, for us to come to a conclusion of a need for a workshop, you know. So let's zoom in, because by posing those questions, definitely, you are trying to assist in terms of saying what are the grey areas that must be addressed by this by this bill, you know. So yes, when we come to the time when we want to make a determination, which is going to be on the 14th, as a committee, we are more informed of some of the details of the said bill. I think that's how we agreed as a committee. And feel free, members, let's not complicate this process. Feel free to engage with the presentation, you know. So those are the questions that have been posed. I hope you have captured all the questions, but I repeat, if members feel that they are not following on the presentation, members must listen. At times, some of these aspects tend to be very technical. Members must be at liberty, to ask a question, you know, because I wonder if there will there be any other time where we can approach this matter differently, you know. So I'm just pleading with members that let's follow the presentation, and where we don't understand or where we maybe feel that something is missing, feel free to, raise a hand. And the issue of the time will be entertained at the end of this program. So for now, I think there are specific questions that have been posed, and I'll appreciate if there is a response to those questions before we move on with this particular presentation. Just to turn this whole thing into a bit of a two-way process where we engage on the presentations. It can't be a one-way process. That's what the workshop is supposed to be, you know. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think what we've done is that I think Kathy was correct to jump to the last slide, because I think that highlights all the conceptual issues. I think if we just pause there for a while, and then Kathy can respond to all the questions, and we've brought quite a big team, so I think it would be useful if we go through all those conceptual questions in quite a lot of detail, and then Kathy can respond to each of those. And we don't necessarily need to do the comparison between the SSA and the FNB, because a lot of those are quite technical changes, but we can, if we have time, we can go back to those. If that's good, will work for the committee chair.
Yeah, as said, just a response to issues, questions that have been posed specifically.
All right, thank you, Chair. I should start by saying that if anybody wants to engage with this material, you have a very willing recipient. We love this stuff, so we will talk about it as much as you want to. And we have, right from the beginning of the process, when I think my peers first came, my colleagues first came here in February, we have been wanting to talk and engage and talk through those issues, and we have continued, and we still say we make our time available. Unfortunately, I understand that your time is limited, and so often we have to try and squeeze very big issues into a relatively short time. So my apologies if it does come across that we're trying to rush you through this process. That's not at all the intention. In terms of the, I think what I'll do is I'll start with the end questions first, that we can get back to the substance of what's on the table here. I don't think that we just need to be careful when we're talking about investor protection. There was a question around that this legislation is not protecting investors. We need to differentiate between capital markets, financial markets, which is dealing with the raising of capital, how we access funds in order to grow our businesses, from accessing loans through the likes of a bank, for example, and investing your money not directly in a share where you can buy Sasol, for example, on the JSE, versus having access to a Sasol share through some type of investment vehicle. Now, what this legislation deals with is the shares themselves, how those shares are listed, how they're traded directly, how you own them directly. It's not dealing with the other stuff. It's not dealing with investment vehicles and these products which you can use in order to access loans and the like as individuals. And so from that side, this law does protect investors. We recognize that there might be failings or weaknesses and other parts of the legislation, and I think those are policy priorities, but that's not what this law is dealing with. This law, even the existing Security Services Act, goes a long way to protect investors. I think this law continues to do that, and what it does is it introduces stronger protection against other areas that aren't currently regulated or aren't regulated to the right scope.
If I could just add to Kathy, I think the majority of those concerns are dealt with in another piece of legislation, which is the Financial Advisory Intermediary Services Act, the FASE Act, which, as with all our legislation, Treasury legislation, is subject to review. So those issues are, and we have learned quite a lot of lessons from, and I think some of my colleagues may want to add on, the lessons that we have learned from Fidentia, for example, and the need for reviewing the way that we deal with those legislation. That is not part of this bill. That will be come up in the review of particularly FASE. I think that a lot of those concerns are certainly justified in the sense that just as the financial markets innovate very quickly, criminals innovate even quicker. So part of the Twin Peaks process is exactly that other peak, which is market conduct, which is a peak that we need to ensure is as strong as possible. And so there will be quite a lot of legislation coming probably next year in terms of dealing with those specific issues. But as Kathy says, this bill is more of a prudential bill, so it's more of not a market conduct bill, it deals more with how the system functions. But we will be coming back with more legislation, and we look forward to that, I think.
Thanks, Roy. In terms of are we regulating the JSE more, that's a difficult question. The short answer would be we're not intensifying the regulation of the JSE. What we're doing is we're spreading what the... As I'd spoken previously, is that the likes of the JSE, what it does is it has to provide the exchange system, it has to make sure that the exchange works, but it also has to supervise its users. And the concerns that emerged over our engagement process was that because it has this dual role, that it may have market power, and as a result, perhaps some tension between how the JSE and its users interact, particularly given that the JSE is conflicted between its commercial activity and its supervisory role. So in other words, anything that the JSE does is protected. It enjoys a limitation of liability. What that means is where we've extended the scope of regulation is to make sure that where the JSE is interfacing with its users, it's doing so in a fair manner. That's, I think, really the scope of the extension or the deepening of that regulation. So that would talk about, for example, that the JSE would need to have a complaints mechanism in place. How does it deal with its complaints? It must also be transparent in the way that the rules are issued and make sure that the users of the exchange can have a say and would know what rules are coming before those rules are issued. In terms of additional business that the JSE can do, that's subject to regulator approval. It's those types of rules, many of which the JSE is doing already. The other additional one relates to conflicts of interest, that it needs to have arrangements in place to identify and manage its conflicts. So I think that these all provide for an improved fairness in the way that the JSE is operating.
This intervention, is it mainly because of maybe some complaints raised by internally, or is it as a result of compliance to international standard? Are we making this intervention on JSE functioning as a result of complying to international standards, or is it because of complaints that has been received locally?
Thank you.
But also, let's get an indication if there's a complaint received locally. How severe is the magnitude of such?
It would be a combination of both. So what we are sensitive to is that there are certain users of the market infrastructure. And we're talking about the JSE because that's how the question was asked. But this would apply for any of the SROs as well, so it would apply also to Strait in this instance, is that there is a perception, real or not, that because of this combined role that these entities have of providing the infrastructure to its users, but then also regulating those users and making, so it provides the infrastructure, it provides the trading platform, and it does that for a fee, but at the same time it imposes rules on those users. And there's a perception that, and this is within the local market, that the needs of the users are not always taken as seriously as the needs of the shareholders. So that's really what it comes down to, I guess. And so what we've done is looked at some of those examples, and we have looked to the international literature, but also forums, to see whether these are common experiences within the SRO model, and if so, how are they dealt with. So our response have been informed by best international standards, although I know we need to be careful when we use that term. Best international standards applied within the local context, I think, is probably a useful direction to take. But really taking a pragmatic response, identifying where do we think the problems are and how can we make the mechanism more transparent, more fair, in a way that we can all see whether it's more fair. So we don't want to, for example, impose a rule that says don't do anything, we do have a rule which says don't do anything that's unfair for your users. But there's also what we're introducing are requirements that are more, that allow transparency as to whether you are in fact treating your users fairly. So the fact that there is a complaint mechanism now, if you make a complaint, that complaint will be on record. That will be useful to the registrar to see which complaints are real, which aren't, and it will help the accountability going forward.
Chair, I think the reason why we're also spending quite a bit of time on the SRO model, and we also have the SROs here, so we have the JSC representative, I see they've arrived, and Strait also representative, so I'm not sure if you also want to direct questions to them. But they are represented here because they can also, I think, defend themselves if there's anything they need to defend themselves from. But it was obviously one of the big issues raised during the hearings that we had. So it is something that we thought we'd spend a little bit of time about, explaining how it works and some of the things that we've done in response. We will explain in a lot more detail the technical stuff that we've done next week, but we thought we'd just give a bit of a sense on the SRO model. So I think from a workshop perspective, it might be useful for us to pause a bit, and with your guidance, we could maybe talk a bit about it, or I don't know what you feel.
Can I maybe explain, there was a question around what the SRO model actually is.
Maybe
can I explain
that
and then also how it's captured in the law?
Sorry. I've also noted Honorable Luyenge, but maybe you must conclude on this explanation, and if you still have a question, I'll accord you an opportunity thereafter. So you can proceed. Feel free. Please feel free to express yourself on questions raised by members. Don't worry about that. That's our business. We will manage that. If we need more time, we'll make a determination at the end of this session. So please feel free to give whatever information you think is necessary for members, for decision makers, I mean, to consider. And that's the essence of this exercise. As to how we accommodate, I think I've clarified how we are intending to approach this at the beginning of the meeting. This is a workshop, and we have identified key role players who must come in. This is not a public hearing, so we're not going to give... that's why I was very specific to say they will come in as observers. So let's not deviate from that directive. You know. All right, thank you.
Okay, I'll talk then about the SRO model and how you would interpret or read this in the law when you're reading it. And I will talk to the exchange again, because we all know the JSC and we're familiar with what the JSC does. So what the law does is it says that if you are doing a certain activity, if you are performing this role of trading, you are matching buyers and sellers in the equities market, for example, you must be licensed as an exchange. Now, because you are licensed as an exchange, you are required by the law to perform certain functions, your duties, your obligations. And then those obligations are described. Those obligations will talk to the operational aspects of what it means to be providing this trading platform. So it will say that, well, you must allow for the you must provide for this trading activity, you must have sufficient capital, you must do all these things that are necessary for that trading to happen in the right way. But in addition to which, that license also requires you to supervise your users. Now, by supervising your users, there's different components to that. It means that you have to issue rules which govern how your users interface with the infrastructure, how they interface with the exchange. It also talks to how those users, the stockbrokers, will deal with each other. It also requires you, as the exchange, to supervise not just your own rules. So by supervising, mean that you've got to issue your rules, you've got to monitor compliance, and you've got to enforce them. Besides that, you also need to monitor compliance of your users with the broader act. So even outside of your own exchange environment, you've got to supervise compliance. You won't enforce that. That will then be the responsibility of the registrar. Now, if we think then what this means, is we're talking about setting rules and supervising those rules and enforcing those rules, which is a job typically done by the regulator, which is the Financial Services Board in this instance. The SRO model, what it's doing is it's delegating, or it's giving delegators — there'll be a whole legal war over whether we do delegate or not, so I won't use that term — it's the giving of some of that supervisory responsibility. It's taking it from the regulator, from the registrar, to the entity. So it would be that the JSE or Strate. So that the JSE or Strate becomes responsible for that supervisory function or some of that supervisory role. It doesn't remove the ultimate responsibility from the Financial Services Board. The Financial Services Board is still the regulator. But the way in which that regulation happens, some of that is then played out or given effect to by the entity itself. And that's why I started off by saying self-regulatory doesn't mean that the JSE is supervising itself. It's saying that the JSE is supervising its users. Now, one of the concerns with this model is that there is a conflict between in the example where this entity is also a commercial entity, it's profit making. There can be conflicts between, given the fact that you have the power to be issuing rules about your users, that you can be issuing rules in a way which favors your own business, as opposed to the benefit of the market or the benefit of the users themselves. So, for example, a common example that's given is one of margining requirements. So the exchange is responsible for setting the margin, which is the amount that you have to put down on certain trades before you can trade. Now, the lower the margin, the cheaper it is for that transaction, for the user. But the more risky — the reason why we have margin is that if there's a forfeiture or something goes wrong with one of the entities in that transaction, that at least you've got your margin to fall back on. It's like a collateral. The lower the margin, the cheaper it is for the user, and that will then support more business. However, the lower your margin, also the more risky it will be in the case that something goes wrong, because you won't necessarily have the same size of collateral that you otherwise would have. So there's a conflict there. Now, there are a number of other conflicts or examples of conflicts which we could talk through. What the way that you can approach this is to say, well, either we don't have the SRO model at all, but actually the SRO model has functioned really well. We've withstood a crisis, a global financial crisis, and what that showed us was that our regulatory effectiveness is sound. We are regulatory effective. However, we recognize that there could be some weaknesses in the way that the SRO model is playing out. What we didn't have — and this is a timing issue — there are, and this reverts back to a question that had been raised previously around, does this bill have to go through now? Well, actually, there's a lot of reform that's coming through in the bill that's being overlooked because we're getting diverted or distracted by the question of the likes of the SRO model. What we want to do is make sure that the broader reform comes in. And by broader reform, make sure that if there's an insolvency in the system, we've got the law that makes sure insolvency is dealt with in the same way. If something peculiar is happening in the unlisted market, that we now have the authority to have sight of that market and can step in if we need to. Those are imperatives. These things have to be done now. And by now, it means that if there's more of a crisis, the longer we wait, the more risk we have that if there is a crisis within our system, we don't have the adequate tools to deal with it. And that's why we want the bill to go through now. Having said that, we also know that there is a broader discussion which needs to take place, and that's why this question of the SRO review we think is a valid one. The SRO model is working, the regulation is effective, but we need to test whether our model of SRO is best. Can we improve it? And we don't want to rush that discussion by trying to rush some reforms around the SRO model that we might be neglecting others. And that's why that will then go forward with the Twin Peaks discussion going forward. In terms of what we do then in the meantime, it's not to say, well, then we just ignore this whole debate. We strengthen the regulation where we can. And where we can is to make sure that we increase transparency and accountability that try and address these conflicts in a better way than what they were doing in the Security Services Act. And that then talks to the complaints process, the rules making, how the rules are made, how the exchange interfaces with its users, making sure that, yes, you are protected as the exchange from liability because you are performing functions that are required by your license, but that's not to mean you can do whatever you want. It means that we then need to have the checks and balances in place that can expose and hold any entity accountable if it's abusing the power that it has in terms of playing this dual role. That then was a very long response to the SRO model.
All right, thank you very much for that. Please, once more, take your time and give us what we need. I mean, appropriate information to make effective and efficient decisions. So don't put yourself under pressure. If it takes you long, don't worry. That will be us as, obviously, the leaders of this process to make a determination at the end of the day. Members, I think we have been given a thorough lecture on the SRO model. And I think where I am, I'm empowered, and I think I can comprehend now, I mean, the provisions of this model. But I'm not closing it out to say, are there specific questions, before we move to the next question, are there specific questions that members would like to pose around this model? Okay, Honorable Lwenga.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Mine is around the global concerns according to the engagements that were done in terms of ensuring that there is consultation before the introduction of this bill. So what has been a cut across or general concern about this model globally? And then can I check the monitoring and evaluation methodology that can be applied in order to gauge its effectiveness and efficiency? Then lastly, how does it affect us as a country? I'm referring now to South Africa. Is it beneficial to the market or to the users? Thank you.
Are there questions on the model before we take the response? None. Can we get the response now?
Okay, on the international question about the international, the international experience would be similar to what we've experienced in South Africa, which is that in the event that it's that you've got an SRO that's for profit, there are these conflicts that emerge, a natural consequence of having this dual hat. And there are then principles enshrined of how to manage those conflicts. However, in the international arenas, these principles are very high level. So they will say things like, you need to manage your conflicts of interest. Now, that's quite useful, but that's not best for enshrining in legislation what it is that you're trying to do. So what we have then done in terms of this bill is try to give effect to that principle as best that we can in the pragmatic way, where we went through the chain and we said, well, where do we think problems could emerge and protective mechanisms could we build into the legislative architecture that would try and enhance transparency and accountability. And that's the response that you will see, and we'll talk more to next week. In terms of how to test whether the model, was your question about whether the model's been effective? Well, this would play out in two ways. We need to, I'm all for outcomes-based tests, and this would be played out in two ways. Firstly, if you look at your policy objectives, is your market stable? Has it crashed? And are your investors protected? Who's lost money? And lost money not because they invested badly, but because there's been an irregularity in the market. And is it efficient? Do you have to pay more than you should for having to use these services? In terms of whether it's stable, I think the test has been that we've had a stable financial market across a time of extreme crisis and vulnerability internationally. So we would say that the model has been effective from a stability perspective. Are investors protected? Are the users of the infrastructure protected? We think that they get a good service. In other words, it's reliable. It does what it's supposed to. You can trade clear, trade settle, and that all happens the way that it should. And from an investor perspective, that's really key and paramount. However, I think where we could be strengthening are along the lines of what we've been talking about here, that maybe the users of the market infrastructure do not have the voice or have not had the voice that they should have in making sure that the services are provided in an efficient and fair way. Those are complicated questions, which some of it we can test because the markets are stable, they've carried on functioning. In terms of whether the users of that infrastructure are getting a good service at the right fee, that we want to introduce and be able to monitor going forward, and the way in which we do that will, the mechanisms that we've introduced, the new provisions into the bill, go some way in order to be able to monitor and address whether that's happening in the right way. Whether it's beneficial to the market and to users, again, at the end of the day, what do you want? You want a financial market that's working, and our financial markets work. The financial markets in terms of capital raising of companies in the listed environment within the unlisted, that's something different from financial services generally, and I definitely don't want to get into that debate right now, but I think from the issuance of capital, can you issue capital, is that capital taken up, can you raise money, can you trade, do we have liquidity in our financial system, in our financial markets? Yes, we do, and that's it's well documented and good by international standards. There were slides earlier on which spoke to that.
Well, I think maybe you can move to other questions that were posed earlier on. Okay. Are you taking instructions from me or what's happening? I'm not sure. You're supposed to be looking somewhere before you hear.
My apologies.
Yeah, please. The chair is here. It's just on your left-hand side there.
Now that I've been well put in my place, I will continue. Thank you, Chair. The regulation, is it, I'm reverting back to questions that were asked right at the beginning. The regulation, is it good for investors? I think I've spoken to that somewhat in answering the preceding question. So that then, I would say, yes, you want stable markets. What the proposed bill does is extends the regulation to areas that were not currently covered. So primarily, the primary focus of the existing Security Services Act is on the listed environment, for example. What we've done is we've extended that ambit, and we increasingly are going to be looking to the OTC derivative area, which is a market which has been largely outside of the regulatory ambit, and for the investors in those markets, it will be good. I'll use an example. One of the other projects I was recently involved in was the Regulation 28 of the Pension Fund Act, and what that does is it talks to the asset spreading requirements of pension funds. How are pension funds allowed to invest? And what we have done there is motivated for increased diversification within those funds of assets that they can hold, and wanting to enable those vehicles, those funds, to make use of innovative products and instruments if it's done in the right way. Now, by what that then requires, if we talk about OTC derivatives, is we want pension funds, we want long-term insurers, we want these other regulated type entities and vehicles to be able to make use of derivative products which are good and sound and cost effective. We don't want them to be making use of products which are dodgy and expensive and could go under. So this type of regulation lays the framework by which investors and users of those products can be investing in a more sound fashion. Can we keep up with the markets given that there's rapid innovation? I had spoken somewhat to the fact that there was, in the Security Services Act, the registrar was somewhat curtailed in the extent that he could keep up, or she could keep up, with innovations in the market, because we named things in that act, and if you were named, then you were regulated in a certain way. But if you were not named, by implication, you were not. And what we are wanting to do moving forward is give the flexibility within the legislative framework that if these new types of entities that don't fit into an existing definition, if they emerge and we see that they are playing an increasingly important role in the market, it could be systemic, it might not be, it might just be an investor protection issue, that they can be, that this category of user of an infrastructure or this category of infrastructure itself, we can identify it and we can impose some requirements. Even if those requirements are just to report on your activity, it might not be that we impose capital. It doesn't need to be an onerous obligation. It could just be that we put you onto the radar. So it's always difficult to keep up with the markets and the progression there. But what we want is a law that enables the flexibility to the registrar to at least he's got the tools legally to keep up with that innovation, even if the practical keeping up is very difficult to do. And then segregation, what does this mean? Well, that's, I think, a subject to a workshop all in itself. We have previously spoken to the UNIDROIT Convention that South Africa is a signatory to, and it talks to the intermediation of financial services. And this is all very long and complicated convention, which tries to protect you as a client, particularly in the case of cross-border transactions, which increasingly the proportion of transactions are cross-border. So you want to have harmonization across all these different countries to make sure your law is up to a certain standard. And why I'm referencing this convention is it goes into a lot of depth about this principle of segregation, and that you need to have segregation of your assets. Segregation between if I'm the broker and I'm holding assets on behalf of someone else or shares on behalf of someone else, those assets must be segregated, but you can also go into separate accounts. I'm holding assets on behalf of five other people. Must those five other people, their assets all be held separate, or is the fact that we can identify them within a single pool adequate? Segregation is interpreted, we've interpreted segregation to mean identification. You should be able to identify that those assets belong to me, but also separation, that they should be in separate accounts. And there are implications from a practical perspective from insolvency proceedings is why we've taken that route. But that is not the universal law. As I said, segregation means different things to different people, and we could have a lengthy workshop just on that in terms of what, when we say that the principle of segregation must be given effect, what do we need to do to give that principle effect as a debate in itself. I've answered the question. Thank you, Chair.
On the principle of segregation, I think what came to mind is the fact that this might be an acceptable language within the practice. So that simply says this is a normally used concept within the industry, isn't it? So as a result, obviously, deviation might take years of theoretical work. You know, so that simply says we stick to the concept,
yes,
because this is a norm within the industry.
Yes.
Is that what you imply?
Yes. Well, beyond that also, segregation, it is a norm, but it can also mean different things depending on how you treat it. So we've treated it within a certain way within our law. So we can't, for example, replace it with separation, because separation itself means something distinct in the financial markets environment. So we have to be very cautious. Often when a word does sound unnecessary, like segregation, it's chosen because when you try and find other words that replace it, those things have specific meanings themselves, which may be something completely different to what it is that you're trying to communicate.
All right, thank you very much. I have noted, Honorable Koronov.
Just one simple question. This bill, will it make financial services more affordable or more expensive? Maybe I must ask the industry.
The question is posed. I don't know, is it a follow-up? Are you done with answering the initial questions, isn't it? So this is a new question, as we will be continuing with, because you haven't concluded your presentation, isn't it? Yeah, so I'm not sure. Obviously, this is not related to a specific aspect. It's just a general question to say, that's part of this conceptual aspect. How is the bill expected to assist in terms of ensuring that what has been asked is
clear? Okay. There are never simple questions in this environment. Your question, I can try and simplify it by answering it in of two areas. The one will be the keeping in mind that what this bill does is it covers many different areas. So where it should bring services down, it shouldn't increase the cost of provision of services, will be in the provision of services between the infrastructure and its users, because this is another requirement we've introduced, is that the way in which fees are calculated needs to be disclosed. So that fee requirement, in addition to the way in which rules, etc., are made, in addition to the fact that the law has not substantively altered for the infrastructure itself, that it should be unchanged or better because there's greater accountability in the pricing, etc. For those areas of the markets which have not been previously regulated or subject to supervision, I expect would increase the cost of. Some of these are related not as a result of this law, though. So, for example, banks, in terms of the OTC derivative trading or participation, are, through other areas of law, being incentivized to have those trades cleared through a central counterparty. Now, if you are to do that there's going to be costs attached to that. You have to set up the infrastructure, you have to regulate it, etc. What this framework is doing is it's on the CC, on the clearing, it's providing for, the law provides for that clearinghouse to be set up. Under the OTC derivative regulation, which is provided for in this law but is not detailed in this law, that will happen through regulation and subordinate regulation. That will then give, it will articulate or tell which products must be centrally cleared, which must not, and for those products which now have to change the way in which they're traded or change the way in which that trade happens, there will be added cost to that. But that is part of the process going forward, which is to make sure that where we are imposing new regulatory requirements, we only do so for those instruments where it's considered imperative because of the risks that they're bringing to the market. And even though there might be a direct bilateral increase in the cost, what we don't want is to spare that bilateral cost for a social cost, which then has to be borne further down the line because that transaction fails or a market lands up failing.
Yes, I think just to add to Kathy's response, I think it is very important to balance the costs of regulation, particularly in financial services, and particularly in the area like financial markets, with the potential costs of not regulating. So the global financial crisis, it is amazing to see how expensive it is developing for, particularly for treasuries around the world and for governments around the world, how expensive it is becoming. And we ourselves experience substantial economic losses as a result of what happened in other markets. So I think one has to be very careful about ensuring that we also reduce the potential costs to us as a country from poor regulation. So there is a balance that needs to be struck.
Yeah, no, well, one can agree more with that conclusion because in the spirit of the workshop, of course, I will argue that we'll never do a, or maybe our cost analysis won't be complete up until we have the opportunity cost of not doing, of not regulating. I think that will obviously, as you have correctly summed up, conclude our cost analysis. Because as we don't regulate, let's also think of what will be the cost of losing investment as a result of non-regulation because of not complying to traditional standard, as an example. You know. So, yeah, I think we can proceed with our, because I think we are just about to conclude the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. So, what the presentation now does is it explains in more detail some of these principles or these concepts that we've been talking to up until this time. And it looks at what the Security Services Act does and how the Financial Markets Bill amends or gives effect to change. So on the Security Services Act, the SRO model was generally applied. The Financial Markets Bill will retain, or is anticipated will retain this model. However, the conflicts of interest between the role as commercial entity and supervisor are strengthened in the as well as the service provider provisions. So that talks to the compliance mechanism and the likes. The financial markets infrastructure, this concept, in the existing Security Services Act, it talks to the exchange, the depository, and it says that you will then be licensed as that, but then it uses interchangeably the likes of the term exchange with the term SRO. So it's almost as if you're being licensed as an SRO. What the bill does is it recognizes that's not the case. You are not being licensed as an SRO. You're being licensed as a provider of market infrastructure. And so we have then reverted to use the term financial market infrastructure. So when you see this being used in the bill, please don't think that we've introduced something else entirely. It is not. It's talking about the exchange. It's talking about the depository. Where we were first confronted with this issue is that we now have an infrastructure which is not an SRO, and that is the trade repository. What a trade repository does is for transactions which are not listed on an exchange, but are seen to be sensitive to stability of the market, they need to be reported so that the regulator, the Reserve Bank, the Treasury, can be monitoring activity in these markets and understand what's happening, the size of these transactions, the size of the markets, who's trading with who, etc. And that entity is not an SRO. So initially we tried to make all these linkages. We referred to this general provisions that apply to SROs and the TR, but it doesn't make sense, because actually what you're really talking about is market infrastructure. A CSD, a trade repository, an exchange, a clearinghouse, these are all market infrastructure, even if they're not SROs. Then under the Security Services Act, a local presence was required if you were to be licensed as any of these entities. Under the Financial Markets Bill, this question of a local presence has been brought under the spotlight, and largely because of this move to central clearing, particularly of an unlisted market, as well as the trade repository. Now, these are new entities which have been, concepts and entities which are being brought under the bill, which weren't in the Security Services Act. And while there are supervisory risks associated with having a foreign provider, in the context of a clearinghouse, for example, there might be greater risks by requiring that provider to be operating off a local balance sheet, because really what that's meaning is that they're operating off the bank's balance sheet and you're not spreading the risk. All you're doing is you're putting the risk straight back into the banking sector. So the flexibility, I've spoken a bit about the flexibility, we're wanting to enhance flexibility within the legislation. And this is one area where we say, well, where it's appropriate, a local presence might not be necessary, might not be appropriate. And therefore, we don't want to stipulate that in the law, whether you have to have a local presence or not. Also, whether you must or must not be local, and the circumstances surrounding that might change over the time, so we don't want to enshrine it in the law. We want to say that as the markets change, as these providers change, so there must be the flexibility within the law to accommodate these different models. Moving on then to the foreign participation. Direct foreign participation talks not only to the providing of infrastructure. In other words, can a foreign clearinghouse or entity that does clearing, provides a clearinghouse offshore, can it provide a clearing function locally without being located here? So it's talking about the provision of that infrastructure, but it also talks about the users of that infrastructure. Can we conceive of a bank located in Switzerland who should be able to directly access our settlement system? These in themselves are very complicated issues, and it's difficult to say, in fact it's impossible to say once and for all, well, this entity should be local, this entity should be foreign. So again, the flexibility is provided in the law that where it's appropriate, the minister will prescribe or enable these entities to be foreign but subject to requirements as seen fit for that particular market. So in other words, the requirements for a foreign broker would be very different for the requirements for a foreign participant into the settlement system. And that discussion is completely different to whether we're talking about the provision of a foreign trade repository versus a clearinghouse versus an exchange and the likes. So in recognition that all of these discussions are different and peculiar to their own issues, that flexibility is again left or introduced into the law. The Security Services Act had limited oversight over unlisted, the OTC derivative market. It did provide that the registrar had some powers, but not fully to the extent we think is necessary to live up to our international commitments. There's been a lot of discussion about the fact that we are committed and signed up to G20, but taking a step back from that, I think whether there was a G20 or no G20, whether we had signed this or not signed this, what's really important is that if we see there are potentially weaknesses in our market, we need to address those weaknesses. And currently it's impossible for us to say unilaterally or convincingly that we know where all the weaknesses are, because we actually don't know, because we don't have the regulatory oversight, we're not getting the information. And so our international commitments are important, but our local commitments to our investors and our markets are more so, and we expect to manage those going forward. I have spoken about under the Security Services Act, how there were particular players that are specified and defined and then regulated, and then anyone who's not defined largely lay outside of that. We intend to introduce a fuller regulatory coverage. Again, what we don't want is to, there has been the talk about the cost of regulation. We know regulation is expensive. What we don't want is unnecessary regulation. We don't also think that all entities should be regulated in the same way. You should be regulated in according with the risks that you bring into the market. Those risks need to be understood. That process needs to be, the process of introducing new regulation needs to be a transparent one. It needs to be an engaging one. What the law needs to do is make sure that it can provide at least for that process to take place. Financial stability is a policy priority under the Security Services Act, but there are no explicit provisions which deal with stability. So the two main thrusts of the new bill in terms of financial stability are firstly with respect to dealing with if there is a crisis or a problem, what do you do? Significantly strengthening the insolvency provisions. It must be noted that a lot of the regulation or the requirements on the entities that would be required by these new requirements are already being done. So Strait, for example, has, even without being told they have to do it in terms of the law, have put together an extensive insolvency manual and tried to map out everything that they need to do, what their users need to do in the case of an insolvency. But it doesn't have the effect of, or doesn't have the strength of the law behind it. And so what we've wanted to do is make sure that the law, in fact, provides for it, and that then strengthens the arrangements that the infrastructure has in place to deal with these issues. Also on the financial stability, and I think this is spoken to later, is that there is also recognized the role that needs to be played between the registrar here, the Registrar of Security Services, and the prudential or the systemic regulator, as will increasingly be emerging under the South African Reserve Bank and the Twin Peaks structure. And there are provisions in place which will require that the various entities involved under this legislation, for example the exchange or the CSD, needs to have arrangements in place to monitor systemic risk that might be emerging within its own structures, and then reporting that through to the registrar, who would then need to have arrangements in place with the systemic regulator, with the prudential regulator, to make sure that if risks are picked up, how do you address them? Segregation of assets, we've spoken about to some extent. Limited liability, I have also spoken about that, and this was driven by concerns by stakeholders that the SROs do enjoy or captured under our limited liability clause in the same capacity as the registrar is, and it was questioned whether that was appropriate. The way that our law is currently structured, as I explained it, is that if you are licensed as an exchange, as the depository, as a clearinghouse, in order to be licensed, you have to perform certain functions under that license. And that liability protection pertains to those obligations that you have to perform or satisfy in terms of the Act. So we think it's appropriate that it is retained, but it does need to be balanced. And how is it balanced? Well, then you have to have these other accountability provisions in place. The Security Services Act aligned, and you'll see that there is a general question here around overlapping jurisdiction, but the Security Services Act was aligned to the old Companies Act. We now align to the new Companies Act. The Security Services Act was quiet on overlapping jurisdiction, and we have now increased or require coordination between the regulators where jurisdiction is overlapping. And I did speak to that somewhat in the beginning. So what we don't want are two different regulators taking a different view on a particular market player for the same activity that it's performing, and it's imperative that, that there is harmonization or consistency, and the law does provide for that. It's the Financial Markets Bill will strengthen international or its relationships with the international counterparts, and this again is critical in an environment of increasingly cross-border transactions. It goes hand in hand with the insolvency provisions as well as this talk about external participation in our markets. I should also be clear to say when we're talking about external participation, it's not to say that these players weren't, that these foreign entities are not here and we suddenly going to have a completely new market. What we are recognised is that in many instances we do have a significant foreign participation in our market, and what we need to ensure is that the registrar has got the adequate tools to deal with how these players interact with our players that we've got direct supervision over. And the MOUs are an important support to that role as well. Merger takeover transactions, this is really around market structure. Previously, the Securities Services Act spoke to merger takeover transaction approval above 15%. That has been enhanced where to minister approval, where there are changes in control. On the codes of conduct, a code of conduct is where we say how you should behave in a very principled fashion, in a principled fashion, but through principles. And previously that was limited to the users of these various infrastructure. And the question was raised to us why it was that is only the users are subject to a code of conduct and not the providers of the infrastructure or other providers of security services who are not these users here. And so we have expanded those provisions. However, we are sensitive to the fact that as a licensed entity, as an exchange, as a CSD, you are required as part of your functions, as part of your license criteria, to satisfy obligations which we would expect to be significantly more onerous than a code of conduct would be. But what we've provided for is that if there is an area of business or an area of conduct which is not explicitly provided for in the law, that the registrar at least has got the power that he can impose some requirements on that through a code of conduct. It's also to deal with those new funny entities and players that we've spoken about as well in the grey areas lying outside of our named, of those entities that are named. So again, we've spoken about these CFD transactions, and what we want is that where there are entities that are not subject to explicit regulation, that again we can still impose a code of conduct on those persons. And then lastly, on the insider trading, this speaks to insider trading, but there really is a more general statement that could be made around the market abuse, the causes around market abuse. And the market abuse provisions under the Securities Services Act are strong, but over time, I think the Directorate of Market Abuse has recognized that some of the provisions may not be useful and also could be strengthened or improved upon just in terms of how the directorate functions on a day-to-day basis. And so the provisions that have been proposed strengthen the existing provisions, and that relates not only to insider trading but also to other prohibited practices. And that then does take us to the end of the presentation. So thank you, Chair. We welcome further questions.
Hi, thank you, Kathy. We are going to take a 5 minutes, or maybe not a five, a 10 minutes. Let's make it 10. Time is of essence. Let's make it 10, and we will then take questions if there are questions from members. If not, we'll proceed to our next presentation for the purpose of our workshop. Thank you very much. So we'll be back at the time now from myself.
almost half past, let's be back here.